Your support, this is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Technology Bites next.
Hey guys, how's it going? It's a really professional show that we run here. So we make sure that we don't have anything like gaps, time gaps, just blabbing on about nothing while we're trying to get the intro ready to play. This is tip top. This is quality radio. This is 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. So you know it's got to be good.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Yeehaw!
Yippee-yay! Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Lee is got the SARS.
Doesn't he know it's not fundraiser right now?
He's practicing for fundraiser, being able to will himself. Him.
You know, I said last week that I was feeling a little bit sick, and I was going to go ahead and come to the show to share.
And you did.
Evidently, it worked.
I see. I wasn't feeling well, really, and I stayed home. Barrett questions my integrity because I posted a photograph on Facebook in my front yard.
I'm sure as you were sickly hobbling to the front door, rife with, you know,
the term I used in my email was under the weather. I didn't say I was violently ill and bedridden. I was having a vision problem.
The mind just fills in.
I couldn't see coming to do the show.
He was under the weather. He was out in his backyard floating on a raft in his pool.
Under some nice
looking
blue.
Up at the weather.
Yes, there it was.
Blue sky, white fluffy clouds.
I thought, you know.
Red bottle brushes.
Everybody yes. else calls in sick to this show. I call in vacation.
It's like stationary fireworks.
You said exploding bottle brushes. I was concerned for you for a little while. That could have gone horribly, horribly wrong.
No, unable to let anything ride. My social media updates were used against me to harass and violate my safe space. I didn't realize my Facebook was a trigger. I post trigger warnings in the future for you. All right, so welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. I'm still under the weather, but...
Are you just tired or just not feeling...
I'm just tired.
So what are you taking photos of this time?
Are you having vacation withdrawal? Is that the thing? It's been too long since
it has
been.
How long has it been
since your last trip?
We went to New Zealand in November. Right.
That's not that long for such a major trip, though. You're just too used to trotting the world.
I am. I'm just used to the trot.
He has daylight savings time itis.
Daylight savings time.
I must say, it just sort of particularly sucks this year for some reason, the spring forward thing, yeah.
I didn't realize. I somehow had it in my head that it was backwards and did not get it right. I set all the clocks correctly.
I
couldn't figure out why it was still dark at 6:30 in the morning. It's like, what's going on?
Did you sprung backwards?
I fell somehow.
I don't even know what I did.
I was very disoriented for the first 5 minutes of that first Monday morning.
Well, and to just add to the fun, all those devices that were hard-coded with the date of when daylight savings time begins and ends, you know, there's all the people who a month earlier their stuff had switched.
Yeah, because they changed it twice, like
2005,
a couple years ago. Yeah.
And then they changed it back a little while ago. That's why I just UTC. You know, with UTC. That's universal. Universal time.
Why don't we just,
also, a.k.a. Zulu,
GMT, I wish people would just get rid of...
Time?
Daylight savings.
I'll just see you when I see you.
You know who started daylight savings?
Benjamin Franklin as a joke. Honestly, he first proposed it to save candle oil.
But you know
oil.
Who first implemented it?
No.
Obama.
The Germans.
The Nazis.
Yeah, specifically.
That sounds like...
Time?
Look it up.
Look it up.
Das ist nicht dein.
No daylight.
Yeah, so I'm sure there's a YouTube video to Hitler reacts to daylight savings time. It's meme-tastic. Are you really?
I'm good.
I'm looking it up.
Jay's looking it up.
Snopes it.
No, Barrett's screen had YouTube like already up, and so I thought, no, you're not going to go look up a video of Hitler reacts to.
He does, though. I've already seen it. I think he does.
So, and it, just so everyone knows, I believe the proper pronunciation is daylight savings time.
It's daylight saving time.
Daylight savings times.
It's daylight saving time.
Daylight saving time. There's no S's.
There's no S's in there except for saving.
It's impossible.
Or as I call the fallback one, the precious.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Just in the middle, right?
It's not saving
Savings or savings?
Although in favor of maximizing daylight savings hours, Benjamin Franklin did not originate the idea.
He did not?
He did not.
Benjamin Franklin lied to me.
Trololo.
Englishman William Willett led the first campaign to implement daylight savings.
Oh, yeah, that was Mel Gibson.
Yeah. Freedom from daylight saving time.
Freedom from
Germany was the first country to enact daylight saving time.
What year?
It took World War I for Willett's dream to come true, but it was 1916.
Oh, it was World War
One. It wasn't Trump. I mean Hitler.
It was back when they had big mustaches.
It was the Kaiser.
Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yes.
The point on his helmet cast a different shadow that day. He was a big sundial.
Not only did they have 6 more weeks of winter, they sprung forward an hour. It was a big, big deal.
Caused a world war.
Not everyone in the United States springs forward or falls back.
Yeah.
That's true. Well,
Arizona.
I think Indiana does it on a county by county
basis. Parts of Indiana.
I think
Arizona.
Imagine. That's one of those where you sort of go, okay, no, let's line up and decide as a group.
There's one other state, I think.
There's one. So state's it's Kentucky or Indiana. I forget. We had a program around this a number of years ago, and then we never, ever looked at it again.
Well, Indiana's only part of it, I think.
So there's one state that has 2 different time zones in the same state, and then parts of the state do and do not observe DST. So at any one point, you're tracking 8 different time zones in one state. So try to schedule that.
That's like doing the Russian language.
That's what I'm saying. Just GMT.
Russia has how many time zones?
And then localize the time. Let the UI localize the time.
Let's ask our Russian expert, Flicted.
I don't know how many time zones are in Russia.
You're useless.
I was making a comment that it's like trying to speak Russian because there's 6 cases for like different usage
of
words that changes the end
of
every word.
Russia is, though, is I think. All right, it has like
daylight saving time works out fine because all of my devices now. All of my devices update the time automatically except for my landscape lighting. So I have to fix
what
that.
What about like a kitchen timer stove?
Does it matter? If the landscape lighting doesn't adapt, does it matter? Because it just comes on.
It comes on mine comes on a timer. So it goes off. It goes off. It's still dark now. But, you know, so
and comes
so
on
when the shady white
light.
Van went driving by my house when I was leaving for work the other day, I didn't have all my lights lit. No,
you know what? Why don't you replace it with something that
photo sensor?
Yes,
yeah.
Philips Hue tracks all that, and when you come home, it'll turn stuff on. It says like, "Hey, Jay's home! Yay!
He's under the weather. Let's make
he's under the weather. Let's try and cheer him
let's,
up.
Let's
no,
make
he's
the
not,
bottle.
He's taking pictures of plants. He's like, not coming in to see
let's
us.
Let's make the
hey,
bottle brushes look
my
nice.
My bottle brush trees are phenomenal, and it's about. It's only a few weeks that they're in full bloom.
They bring all the photogs to the yard.
They do bring a lot of red schmutz into the house because they do.
My bottle brush is better than yours.
Brings all the
way. 10 time zones in Russia.
I'm going to call sick tonight. That's the real question.
I'm getting sick right now. Wow.
There's a Kaliningrad time. That's actually one of the time zones. Kaliningrad. And it goes all the way to Kamchatka time, which I believe, if you look at the risk board, is all the
I'm
way
attacking
to right.
Kamchatka from where's,
from Yakutsk.
Irkutsk to Kamchatka.
I could never hold that. It's like, what, eight or nine free armies at the beginning of every turn, but you can never hold on to the greens. This is you need to go down to the little purple countries, like Papua New Guinea, and just sit on
no,
those
you
and
go
build
down,
up and
you
build
go down
up and build
to Australia
up.
And you keep Eddie amassing is armies, and then you eventually just work your way out. Have you ever played multi-board Risk?
No, that sounds like a bad idea.
It's a lot of fun.
Like right. alternate
you
worlds?
You just link the two boards together.
And then you just draw little lines, like what countries can it, they go from?
Whatever. Okay, so Irkutsk connects to Kamchatka. Mm-hmm.
Little land bridge. Yeah,
I forget how it works. Now I have to look it up. I haven't done it in a while. And there's also nuclear rules for Risk available.
Ooh, what are those?
It's where you can dedicate.
Where you just get totally tired of playing. You're like, okay, we got to end this now.
You know, you could convert either one or I haven't looked at the rules since like 78 or whatever, but it came out in Dragon Magazine, which is the D&D magazine. Yeah. And you basically allocate a number of armies to be a nuke, and you can nuke the neighboring country as an attack, but then the country becomes uninhabitable. And you roll dice to see how many turns. So, like, if you want to, you can't hold it, but you don't want someone else to hold it and amass the armies, you throw a nuke in there so they don't have the total
and
domination.
Then after X amount of turns/half-lives,
it
comes
back?
It comes
back, yes.
Wow.
So, let me ask you this. How long would it take you guys to actually play a game of Risk? Because I would play with my cousins and other friends, and sometimes we would go all day. And we would just eventually have to quit.
It depends on who I'm playing. If I'm playing serious people that want to play, it would probably go for about 8 hours.
Yeah, it's a full day. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a commitment.
But if you play with Cynthia, if you play with my wife, she attacks just randomly. She's just, you know, she's just a fly in the ointment.
She's playing by North Korean rules.
I attack the darkness.
They should have had 3D Risk for Star Trek, where it's on the three... levels.
And so they just had 3D chess. That's all they had, really.
That was it. Only 3D chess.
Sigh.
They should have played Go.
No, yeah, if you do...
As played by the Chinese and by the Balthrogs of Rigel 6.
And now computers. They've been going back and forth. Supposedly Go was like one of the most complex games that computers had yet to defeat human champions in, but no, I think they're doing a Go human champion versus
and
computer
he
now.
Google
he lost the first two or three and then won only one. It was
He won one out of five.
When I came in, he had won his third or fourth, and that was it. He won his fourth, so I guess he lost the fifth one.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, so Google pretty much nailed him. And the thing was, apparently, early on, the AI made a move that this Go master, they chose somebody who would be very credible, so you couldn't do the, oh, well, they just weren't that good, or a real champion could do it. This guy has been, like, many times been the champion and all this. He devoted his life to playing it when he was, like, 12. He was, like, a national champion and went up from there, and he's, like, 30 now. But The computer made a move that a human would not make, that he'd never seen anybody make that move. And then he said, as he looked at, so at first he thought, well, that's stupid. And then he looked at it longer, and eventually he said, that was beautiful.
So it wasn't a randomization. The computer was looking that far ahead, pretty much.
It turned out to be something he'd never thought of. He'd never seen anybody do, and it was like an amazing move.
There was a single tear that rolled down his face.
And it started out white, and then it turned black.
No, if you need, going back to the two-board risk, Alaska attacks Kamchatka, so you put another board on there, and Kamchatka's right there.
Oh, it's like kind of a quote-unquote circular kind of board.
Yeah.
So you really need like a dozen boards to go all the way.
Well, the more boards you have, the longer the game's going to last. That's for sure.
6 weeks.
6 weeks. Give or take. All right, well, let's give out the vital statistics. www.geekradio.com.
Sorry.
Wow. Pretty soon the whole show's just going to be...
It's going to be triggering Groovehouse to say different things.
Things!
Don't throw water on him.
Water!
We can make it be quiet if we just make the phone ring.
Flicton's in a playful mood.
Wow. Mood!
It's not going to make me do something. It's going to make him do something.
Something!
He's part Osriel.
Best of.
All right, so geekradio.com. And you can also join us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
I said irc.cuckoo.com. Cuckoo. Why aren't you doing Flicton? I want to hear the dueling cuckoos.
Laughing.
The channel Tech Bites, if you want to hang out there with us, you can use
Cuckoo.
You can use your own IRC client.
Client.
And or you can use our client, which is based on some very up-to-date Java.
Java!
Completely safe.
Completely safe.
Yeah, and I just had a client who whenever they try to go to this a government system and it's only Java and a Java client thing, and so it says you have to update your Java, and they update the Java
and it still doesn't work.
Well, it still doesn't work, and apparently there's a really super secret secure way to make it work. When it says update the Java, you hit skip and then it works. It's like, wow, I think I had found that out and shown somebody, and then that was a long time ago and I forgot. And then when she talked to other people in the office,
that's very interesting, but let me talk about this.
What do you have to say, Jay?
What is it?
Well, you know, it dawned on me that the Geek Gathering a week from Friday is on April Fool's Day.
Dun, dun, dun.
So when we say we're going to have the Geek Gathering, we're not kidding.
Or are we?
We are lying about it.
Jeez.
Or are we not lying about it?
Or are we? I do know that, well, we don't know that because Lee's out. So we don't know if McAfee's going to be at the Geek Gathering on the 1st or not.
Does he any hint that McAfee might come to town to stalk Lee? I mean, I know Lee's been in conversations with him, but...
I assume that's why Lee's no longer leaving the house.
He said he assumed that McAfee was watching him from his backyard, the last I heard.
That was an April 1
joke.
And then
he was going to follow him to the Geek Gathering, just...
McAfee may or may not be there.
I know when... and I'm giving away... one of the stories from the news, but when the FBI said they had their own way to hack the iPhone, I must say that for a second there I thought, are they going to say that McAfee's going to do it for him?
We don't want to get into that.
No,
but
he's not. But
that doesn't really pay. I figured as much, you know, hubbub is going on about that, you could make more than they're making for cracking the phone. But I'll save that because I didn't know that you had that in there.
All right, so that's the information. And the phone that rings into oblivion is 713-526-5738. The phone that's never answered.
Oblivion!
All right, so 2 hours of fantastic radio with...
is
hour and 40.
Just ahead of Flicton.
Flicton the parrot.
Apparently, Flicton
finally started taking his meds. All right.
Somebody's meds.
All right, well, with Peter Hughes in the studio, we won't have the cutout at 8:30,
or the dogs, or the TV.
I can make that happen. Is,
I do all my catching up on TV from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. That's
all right. So let's do the Technology Bites info shot. Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes, injected directly into your skull.
Figured I'd pause a little extra for Flicted, because I know he likes that when the intros end and I don't speak immediately.
Well, we're going to see if you drop out at 8:30.
So as mentioned just moments ago, broken here. The FBI, you know, there was going to be the big showdown with Apple and the FBI was going to be early this week. And suddenly the FBI basically came forward and said, nah, we figured out our own way to do this. And so we don't need the hearing. And so they stopped. So the hearing did not happen. Federal authorities cited a newly discovered, quote, unlocking method that it hopes won't require Apple's help. Now, of course, now imagine if this doesn't work, the FBI coming back to the judge and, oh, yeah, we thought it would work. Now we need Apple to do even more. But
I thought originally that's part of what they said, though, was that they thought that they had a way to do it without Apple's help and that they were asking for the hearing to be delayed for a week while they looked into it or something. Mm-hmm.
That was kind of fuzzy. Yeah, there were different reports. Some people said they're kind of backing off or they had maybe struck a deal, but really I think it was just like a more of an administrative delay is what it sounded like, or maybe some kind of posturing.
Because the one story I saw said that they asked them to vacate the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
But then we found out who it is that the FBI is working with, and it's an Israeli mobile software developer called Cellebrite.
Don't they make
celebrate
machines?
iPhones? Come on.
Celebrate.
That's according to a story filed by Reuters this morning based on a report in Wednesday's Reuters copy of Israeli daily newspaper, which I am not going to try to pronounce. Sorry. I cannot speak Hebrew or Yiddish or anything.
Middle Earth.
If the software company succeeds, then the FBI will no longer need the help of Apple, the report claimed, citing unnamed industry sources. According to its website, Cellebrite offers, quote, mobile forensic solutions, which give access to and unlock the intelligence of mobile data sources to extend investigative capabilities, accelerate investigations, unify investigative teams, and produce solid evidence.
I wonder if somebody from Cellebrite contacted the FBI, or if the FBI found out about them, or how that worked.
I would bet it's Cellebrite contacted them, because I must say that my faith that the FBI would even know how to use Google to Google break into my iPhone wouldn't have. In this article says that on Monday the U.S. Justice Department convinced the court overseeing its ongoing battle with Apple to postpone a hearing that was supposed to take place on the 22nd. The DOJ said new leads had been discovered that could provide it with a way to unlock the iPhone 5C used by San Bernardino shooter Saeed Farouk without involving Apple.
And the price tag? $15,000 is all they're charging.
Jeez.
That's what I mean. I figure they've spent more than that just on attorney fees between, you know, just writing Apple letters than $15,000 on the unlocking on this. So you'd think that with such a high-profile thing, they would say, like, hey, $150,000 to unlock it. But $15,000 sounds pretty cheap. You can get, like, a used car
happens.
For that.
I mean, the thing is, you know, the FBI has the resources. Before I would do this, I would take and go and buy an iPhone 5C and put it through the same sort of steps that the shooters thing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're going to mock it up
and then send it over.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'd send that to Cellebrite, and it's like, okay, if you can't tell me what's on this phone, I'm not going to send you any money. That way they prove that they could do it first on one that is in the same sort of situation. Because the FBI's original great idea was, hey, let's change their iCloud password, which is what hosed this whole thing in the first place, is that they reset the password, which it doesn't sound like the guy had an external email account, so his email's on the phone. So when the reset goes out, you can't – it didn't – it messed it all up.
And then the bad thing, too, that so everyone's screaming, like, hey, we need backdoors, we need more information, we need more access to data. A whistleblower that I guess left the NSA or left the CIA a handful of years ago, probably close to 15 or 20 years ago, was saying that as far as he knows and the people that he's been talking to, that those agencies are so awash in data that when an analyst goes into Connect, they can't get any real hits. They can't see what's going on because it's too much data. So they're more concerned about collecting everything, and they are not really worried about the tools to go in and find what they need. And he pointed out, hey, they all the traces for the Boston bombings were there, all the traces for Paris were there, but they didn't see them until after the fact because they weren't focusing on analyzing, they were focusing on collecting.
So the, so they've been buying more buckets and not having any way to figure out what
they were basically
in the...
playing e-Pokemon.
Yeah, you got to catch them all.
Got to get them all.
Oh, well, but the government, you can trust them. They know how to keep secrets, right? Oh, you mean like this secret where a government error just revealed that Edward Snowden was the target in the LavaBit case?
Mm-hmm.
If you think back, there was the whole thing. There was the secure email firm LavaBit. In 2013, you know, the government was investigating somebody, but oh, it wasn't Snowden, they said. Oh, they were investigating somebody, and they needed help spying on a LavaBit customer. The owner of the now defunct email service, Ladar Levison, was forbidden under threat of contempt and possibly jail time from identifying who the government was investigating. In court documents from the case unsealed in late 2013, all information that could identify the customer was redacted. But federal authorities recently screwed up and revealed the secret themselves when they published a cache of case documents but failed to redact one identifying piece of information about the target. His email address, ed_snowden@lavabit.com. So, I don't know, maybe it's some
who's
other Edward Snowden. With that, the very authorities holding the threat of jail time over Levison's head, if he said anything, have confirmed what everyone long ago presumed, that the target account was Snowden's. So, isn't that nice? You know, isn't that great how they can handle that? So, I haven't posted the links to the articles yet, but they will be during the show. So you can read more if you wanted to read a recap on that, on the whole sordid story. And then in other hackery type news, there's a password stealing Instagram client has returned to the Apple and Google stores.
Yay.
Isn't that nice? You know, they made that available. Now known as either Insta Detector or Insta Care, you probably shouldn't download it. After an app called Insta Agent was discovered in the Google Play and iOS app stores last November to be credential-stealing malware, the program was removed. The developer of the software, Turker Bayram, has returned with two new apps, Who Cares With Me, Insta Detector, and Instacare, Who Cares With Me, for both iOS and Android that appear to again steal login credentials by claiming the app will show users who is tracking their Instagram account when in fact it obtains user passwords and then uses that information to insert ads into the user's feed.
Wouldn't they maybe like have his name on a list or something? Like
you would think. And you would also think that the name of it being Who Cares With Me is like that's so close to spammy kind of poor grammar and all that. I would have the Google one. I think is pretty. Google Play is fairly open, so I'm not as shocked that it got through there. But Apple's whole thing is about
they're
that,
supposed
you know,
to vet everything.
They're screening this stuff, and so you know it was up longer than the flashlights that had where you could share data from your phone.
Nice.
It was discovered by. A company called PepperSoft, who discovered the previous malicious app and alerted the two stores, said the new apps are just more sophisticated versions of the previous malware app. Instead of sending user credentials back to Bayram's server in clear text, posing yet another security threat, the program now encrypts that data, but still sends it to a server under Bayram's control that is used to insert ads into the user's feed in violation of the Instagram terms of service.
It's totally legit.
So both apps have been pulled, but... You know, be careful when it's something like that. You know, I would say, I guess the other tip besides the apps thing is some of these Facebook contests where it's like, figure out what color your, you know, aura is with our quiz, a lot of those are fakes, and they get people to sign up for it because then you give, by signing up for the contest, you give them permission to access your Facebook data. And then they, once they've got a bunch of people, they sell that to somebody else and then turn the page into something different. And we lost another big name in technology this week, Andrew Grove, Andy Grove, former Intel CEO, who really did help pioneer the modern computing industry, passed away. His name wasn't, it wasn't quite as, he retired, and so his name isn't out there like it used to be. But during the life of the show, we talked about Andy Grove. But among tech's most influential leaders, he's routinely mentioned as part of the same pantheon that includes Bill Gates, Larry Ellison, and Steve Jobs, you know, for good reason. He certainly got, because there was a time where Intel was very close to going down, and he got them out of it and got them to be the kind of powerhouse that they are today. That whole long rise where they rode Moore's Law like a rented mule was Andy Grove. So I'm sure he'll be missed. This one is a nice one. A little bit more hackery type stuff, or more privacy, I guess, on this one. Apparently, several large ISPs have either formed partnerships with or acquired data tracking and analytics firms in recent years, giving them a, quote, vast storehouse of consumer data, according to a report Wednesday from the Center for Digital Democracy. The report says that ISPs have been on a shopping spree to help build their data targeting system across devices and platforms. Superfast computers analyze our information to decide in milliseconds whether to target us for marketing and more. So when you get the ad that you can tell is labeled where it comes from your ISP, that's from these kinds of programs. ISPs are increasingly using programmatic advertising fueled by powerful alliances among data, media, advertising, and technology companies, according to the report. The new advertising model encompasses nearly all the devices and formats we rely on, including mobile, audio, and video. Some ISPs now have the ability to marry a customer's web surfing history with his or her TV viewing habits and mobile app use to target advertising across devices. CDD, Center for Digital Democracy, has sent the report to the FCC, which is scheduled to vote next week on the first step toward tougher privacy rules for ISPs. Oddly enough, several ISPs have opposed the proposals, saying it's not necessary for the FCC to get involved in policing privacy. And they said especially for the chairman who, when he likes to watch... No, they didn't say that. Oh, boy, it would be too bad if your browsing history and television habits got out to people. Apparently they've been going to the NSA school of capture all your data and then figure out stuff to do with it. So we'll keep an eye on that one. The FCC's move toward new privacy rules for ISPs is related in part to the agency's reclassification of broadband as a regulated common carrier service in the net neutrality rules passed in February 2015. Reclassification of broadband moved the authority for policing broadband privacy from the Federal Trade Commission to the FCC, according to privacy groups. This is the kind of other shoe dropping on the net neutrality thing, and I guess the other piece of why a lot of these large companies were opposed to privacy rules.
So these are the same guys that want to force you to rent like a cable modem or a DSL modem. Or...
Yeah, where you can only rent it, you can't like
gotta get it
choose
from them.
Your own, and you can't. You know, they tried. You know, because whatever happened to the cable card? Remember when that was supposed to allow you to like be able to watch TV on your computer?
Yeah, like the tuner cards. Yeah, yeah, those were there for a while.
And another, just
to sidetrack the news for a half second, another bad turn of events. I guess the FCC came out a little while ago and said, hey, you cannot modify firmwares on routers. You know, and mainly it was so you couldn't pollute, you know, the airwaves or do certain things. They supposedly left it open for packages like OpenWRT or DDWRT or, you know, custom open source firmware packages to be able to be installed on these routers. A lot of the companies that make them, like TP-Link, I think maybe Linksys is possibly one of them, they've stopped allowing you to update firmware on the router. So if you, and this was kind of a staple, and at first I was like, what is this really happening? But yeah, a lot of them have statements out there. Now, so what that means, does it mean that you'll never ever be able to run open, you know, WRT or DDWRT on a router? Not necessarily, but it's going to become much more like a jailbreaking situation where they're going to have to look for weaknesses in there instead of being given by the manufacturers an easy way to load the firmware. So this is not good because I run custom firmware on just about all of my routers at home, you know? Jeez. So no good.
Yeah.
No good.
Yeah.
So they are kind of winning. I don't know. I guess that's more FCC, not the cable companies, but it's still just, you know, there's still a lot of battles that need to be fought and won on this front.
You'd think that that would lead somebody to make sort of a more open source type router where you could do, you know, where you could do, use it to your heart's content kind of thing without having to, you know, that's sort of like the bad old days when you had to like have a dedicated machine to do your routing, you know, so you'd have to get, what was the one? I remember there was the one that it was a big deal because it was on a single floppy. There was a Linux router that worked on a floppy or a 3.5-inch disk at the time that you could just put in and then you could route a network with it and have it hooked up to the internet. But because I know I had to do some of those where there wasn't like really a good home product that you could hook up and put a business network, hook it up to the internet. So you had to have a dedicated machine to do it. But, you know, I guess now that machines work longer, I guess you could take an older one and, you know, one that's 5 or 6 years old that you don't use for something else and put Linux on it and set it up. Although it wouldn't do the Wi-Fi, I guess is the...
Are you touching on that whole comment on Bite of the Apple? The comment that, comment/dig that was put out at the Apple event a day or two ago?
The one that, well, I figured we'd go into some of that.
Yeah.
Certainly. And finally, Microsoft. This one, it's sort of like kind of about time. Microsoft has finally added a lockdown feature for macros in Office 2016, apparently in response to increasing attacks. Enterprise system administrators can now block attackers from using a favorite malware infection method, Microsoft Office documents with malicious macros. How long have I tried to think about when the first time that we talked about where you could basically hack somebody with a Windows macro, and I think that goes so far back, I don't remember when we started having those as stories.
I don't remember last month.
Melissa virus was that.
What?
The Melissa virus?
The Melissa virus?
Was like VB through Word document or something.
I remember macro viruses being, you know, because people weren't sending a lot of images as attachments via email, but they were sending a lot of documents. And that seemed to be a vector.
And then one person would get it on a stupid Exchange server and it would, nobody locked down the like distribution list for all, and then like you would get a copy and then another person would open, you get another copy, and 12 people would open, you get 12 copies.
Well, Microsoft this week added a new option in Office 2016, I think there's part of the deal, that allows administrators to block macros from running in Word, Excel, and PowerPoint documents that originate from the Internet. Microsoft Office programs support macros written in Visual Basic for Applications, VBA, and they can be used for malicious activities like installing malware. Macroviruses were popular more than a decade ago, but became almost extinct after Microsoft disabled macros by default in its Office programs. But the technique made a comeback during the past 2 years as attackers have figured out they can use some clever social engineering to convince users to execute macros embedded in documents. For examples, spam emails masquerading as invoices and other business-related messages with malicious Word documents attached. When opened, the documents show a fake warning message saying the content cannot be displayed for security reasons until the user enables macros. Nice. You know, if you can't hack them, fool them, apparently, or social engineer them. Both cyber criminal and cyber espionage groups currently use this technique to the extent that Microsoft's threat data from the Office 365 shows macros are involved in 98% of Office-related attacks. So, Office has long included a setting to block macros in all documents without warning the user and offering the option to bypass the restriction. However, it's not practical for many enterprises because macros can serve legitimate purposes and are useful for certain business workflows. That's why they've now come up with a better solution, a group policy setting that administrators can use to disable macros only for Office files obtained from locations that Windows considers part of the Internet zone. This includes files downloaded from any internet websites, including cloud storage providers like OneDrive, Google Drive, and Dropbox. Documents attached to emails received from addresses outside the organization, and documents downloaded from file sharing sites. Really, it would block my if I torrent a Word doc with some macros in it. It would block. Oh, I'm kidding. So that's the news.
Thanks for that, Pete.
Almost sounds like Flicted. Well done.
Hey, I'm just making fun of Flicted when I do it now. It's very meta, this anagram. All right, so...
Well, I don't... for some reason, I cannot... And I don't know if it's because I'm of where I'm hooked up on here. I can't get at the server with the...
The Geek Radio server?
I can't get at the in-studio one that I usually...
Can't you just get a soundboard from the App Store or something that's completely safe?
Hey, I could... there's this thing for Instagram. I see that. No, I'm kidding. So I guess we'll probably have to do the, like, I'll have to turn up my speakers and we can do the bumpers.
Oh, right. You have that thing you do.
Very old-fashioned way instead of directly through the board. So I have to find those. But I'll say, you know, even before we do the bite of the apple thing, it seems to me the big apple, their event was kind of meh. It didn't blow.
I didn't watch it live, and I haven't even gone to see what they actually announced.
There were no surprises. They announced the iPhone. I guess they didn't call it the iPhone.
The Trump iPhone.
They
have for
the
small
iPhone
hands.
SE, yeah, for tiny little hands. there was a great meme that showed Donald Trump, and they had put little tiny baby hands at the end of his suit.
Yeah.
And so it looked a lot like that character from Saturday Night Live that had, where she had the little plastic doll hands.
Yeah.
But they announced that they announced the small phone, and then they also announced the regular sized the iPad Pro but smaller, and they did it's not a new iPad. They don't call it an iPad Air. It's basically, I guess, it's an iPad Pro instead. So I don't know if the Air thing is going away or if they're making a distinction between the stuff that they're intending to be for business or intending for business or not. Let's see here. So let me, as I talked, to try and cover so that I could do this.
Bite of the apple.
So there was a, there's an article from, what the heck? Cool.
Bite of the apple with
Apple Piece Theater.
Yeah, we're
Apple
Piece. I think
iOS
I
guess, Theater.
Oh, I see. No, iTunes like jumped to the next thing. I don't know.
Got lucky.
I don't know
Sisterhood of
that.
The Traveling Pants. I see is the next title queued up there. joking.
Or some
Star Trek
some hardcore punk stuff. No, it's
out of the
like
original
these,
series.
That's
we're,
some old.
We're playlisting Pete right now.
Two Chains.
What? Vista Pete.
No, Fast Company had an interesting article, and it's one of those where I think there was a real point to it. I found it from Daring Fireball, linked to it. Here's the intro paragraph: "Dreary, claustrophobic, and middling aren't words that anyone ever used to describe Apple's product announcements when Steve Jobs was at the helm. but they serve just fine for yesterday's affair, in which CEO Tim Cook and a series of drab Apple executives announced a fourth iPhone, a powerful iPad Pro, and a number of smaller improvements ranging from pretty watch bands to significant upgrades of its mobile operating system. You kind of wonder, you know, I think there's a point, because they didn't really announce anything that earth-shaking.
Well, they kind of took a dig, too. So the thing that I alluded to before was Phil Schiller actually came out, and he said that, hey, there are how many 600 million people that are using PCs that are over 5 years old, and he said, this is really sad. So more or less he's taking a dig at either poor people or pretty much if you're not like a white affluent male that upgrades their machine every couple of years, because the audience left. And the audience was completely comprised of that demographic. It's just kind of a dig. Right? It's, you know, some people can get more than 5 years out of a machine. There's no real need to upgrade.
Right.
But it caused a row, you know, of course, just on Twitter. But, you know, it was still felt. So on top of it not being an awesome, you know, and one more thing, it's like, and one more dig.
Yeah, that's what you always want when you have one of these events, is to have the biggest thing be that you insulted a huge part of your potential customer base. So, you know, it does seem like they have kind of lost track on, you know, announcing some watch bands, not something that merits having people come out and have a whole big if you really looked, you could see how it did not resonate. I mean, yeah, there was the immediate quick here's what Apple announced today articles, but that was kind of it, you know, and then followed by the hands-on with the new three things, but there was no, it didn't make any big waves, it didn't you know, it didn't get their name out there.
They did drop the price of the Apple Watch, right?
Yeah, $50. Yeah, they lowered
it. That was 100 from $399 to $299.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, no, I guess you're right. They dropped it by $100, but
still not going to get me to buy one. But it's closer.
They're $100 closer than they were. But it just, the event just kind of didn't have that. You know, and meanwhile, alongside that, they haven't updated the Airs or the MacBook, MacBook. Those are all sitting there still on the old, you know, they haven't really had any big refresh. And so it's kind of...
That's what they need to be pushing. I mean,
it's a little bit... I know a lot of people who are waiting right now.
And they pushed me to Microsoft with the Surface Pro, the Surface Book, just because, you know, they couldn't get it in check to, you know, put out a new Air in the time I wanted one. Because I was tired of buying, you know, stuff right at the end of the life cycle. But apparently, no, this time if I had gotten it, it still would have been fresh. Quote, unquote,
oh,
fresh.
No, or it's your fault, because if you'd actually bought one,
that,
then they'd
is
have
that what triggers
the
life cycle? Every time I buy one, they're like, all right, fair, got it. New product cycle.
On the rumor front, though, so this one... And the thing is, I don't think they'll have a big event for it. They'll just probably mention it at WWDC, or it'll just show up on the Apple Store. But apparently there are some – one of the new rumors is that there are some ultra-thin 13-inch and 15-inch MacBook Air notebooks coming. 15-inch MacBook Air is interesting.
That's what I would like to see, yeah.
According to the sometimes very accurate DigiTimes, Apple may have the new notebooks ready for the end of the second quarter. That would be at the end of June, which would fit in with WWDC. Which apparently this year's Worldwide Developer Conference for Apple will likely take place between June 13th and 17th. So it would fit that they could announce it at WWDC and then have sales, you know, pre-orders start a week later and deliver them on the 30th. The new MacBooks will allegedly share a design similar to the 12-inch MacBook and be thinner than the existing MacBook Air, which makes it difficult to infer which MacBook lineup the report is referring to. The rumor has it that the thinner MacBook Airs would feature fully redesigned internal components. There's never been a 15-inch MacBook Air. It's always been an 11-inch and a 13-inch size. It's also been rumored that the MacBook Air could be on the chopping block given the declining prices of the MacBook itself. Because obviously if they bumped up the MacBook... If they bumped up its performance and lowered its price.
But the draw of the MacBook was never the performance. It was always the size of the Air, at least for me. It was just the pure slimness and just...
But the MacBook's been getting thinner.
It has been getting thinner.
Well, I think the first... Not the MacBook Pro, the MacBook. If you've seen a MacBook, remember that that's where they've made it complicated. There's three lines. There's the Air, the MacBook, and the MacBook
Pro. Is there still a MacBook?
The MacBook, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's that.
I thought
they
were
a little silver, though. They
I thought for
like
a while
the
it was
Pro's
gone.
A little bit thicker.
No, that the, it had gone away, but the last year they announced it. Remember, it was that one with the – it's got the USB-C port only, and it's for power and
everything,
your devices and everything else. That's still out there. The price has been dropping. Apple's been lowering the price, and resellers
have
been
lowering the price. So where does it sit on the specs?
On the price –
no,
on the price spectrum, it sits between the Airs and
the
MacBook
Pro,
Pros.
Right.
On the performance – perspective, it sits below or around the Airs.
Really?
Yeah, that was the thing that people were. It was. I think it was designed to have the Skylake processor, and that would give it a big performance bump and let it use low power and so on. And then the processor wasn't ready, and they went ahead, and so there is a performance issue. It's like a year old MacBook Air or a two-year-old MacBook Air has similar power.
You're right. This is very confusing. The new MacBook line looks like the Series 1 of the MacBook Airs, pretty much. And I'm sure there's, you know, at least in the photographs I'm looking at, there's some creative bezeling going on and maybe some lighting, but they look like what Flick did first had, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Well, the first MacBook Air was like you said, it was desirable because it was ultra thin, ultra light, and it was a
you
lot
could
of
put
caveats.
It in a manila
to,
folder.
Huh?
You could put it in a manila folder.
I remember that.
Somebody threw it away with a stack of newspapers.
That was a cool presentation.
Right?
Yeah.
But you know, but you had to say, well, I don't really need a DVD player. I don't really need to have this or that or the other thing. I want the thin ultra light, and I'm willing to take all the hits that come with that.
Everything, all that was okay for the most part, except the processor was an Atom, I think. It was a little underpowered.
But the next generation
but it was
of the
really
MacBook
thin,
Air
it
was,
all right.
the next couple of generations
the next gen was okay.
Really jumped ahead of that,
yeah,
and it
yeah.
became a you know desirable enough for me to get one.
There's
two in here.
But I got the
no,
first
you're
gen.
A pro? Never mind.
I got the first gen, and it was functional. I mean, it did what I needed it to do.
And
it was really lightweight. But yeah, it was a little anemic on memory a little bit, but processor mainly was the bigger thing. I mean, you couldn't really push it too far. But if you wanted to do, you know, two or three things, it was fine. But yeah, they bumped it up. The Air they went a lot better with it on the next few generations.
The 12-inch MacBook, the thing was though, it did have the higher resolution. It has a higher resolution screen is one of the
things.
It's
got the Retina screen.
Yeah, it's a 12-inch display, but it actually shows more, you know, it gives you more pixels than the 13-inch Air. So it gets into it. It's, you know, if they had put the Skylake chip in it, then it would have been performance. It would have set where the price puts it. But at some point, they've got to, you know, at some point, they're all sort of collapsing towards the MacBook, it seems like, the you know. And so, I don't know, you know, the MacBook Pro, at some point, do those all kind of become, do the Air and the Pros go away, and it's all just the MacBook again, but with varying specs? Hard to tell, you know. The last refresh on the MacBook Pro was March 2015.
Do the Pros still have a lot of connectors? Because that was one of the big things with the Pro was you gave up with the Air was you there were a lot of connections that you could make to the Pro that you couldn't and upgrades.
Like twice
you
as many
do.
USB ports, lots of readers, all sorts
Let's
of stuff.
Let's see, it says Apple's refreshed Mac lineup. They've yet to release a 15-inch MacBook Air. Let's see. A redesigned MacBook Air, possibly with a long-awaited Retina display, could be considered a bit of a surprise. Apple's refreshed Mac lineup is expected to feature Intel's faster Skylake processors and Thunderbolt 3 with USB-C, while the MacBook Air and MacBook Pro are also deserving candidates for an overall redesign.
I think you're probably right, Pete. I think that once they get things small enough to where it doesn't really matter, to where the size of the base, you know, the actual chassis, is to provide stability and stuff, to where you're not trying to, like, cram a lot of electronics and get it so small, they might as well standardize on that and then just give you different, you know, specs for different processors and things like that. And maybe do a different screen. Even then, you used to be able to order, like, you know, the matte screen versus the gloss screen on the old MacBook Pros, so, you know, something like that. You could get the, you know, whatever the next version of the Retina display is. Like, you could do the Retina, you could do this.
If you've seen a MacBook in person, the one from last year, the new one, they do have – it does have a bit of that – you know, the MacBook Air, people who were sort of so-so about it, then when they saw one in person, it, you know, it was like, oh, my God. You know, and if you held one, it was like, oh, man, I got to get one of these because it was so thin. It was so revolutionary that way. The MacBook has a bit of that. I was at the Apple Store – you know, last summer I was at the Apple Store twice to get the same person's iPhone – replaced again
due to iPhone failure or user error
due to teenagerness.
Okay.
So I was there twice and saw it on, you know, saw them on the tables and display, and it caught my eye.
They've got some cool colors too. They're three different colors. I think it's like a space gray and
so
a titanium
small,
and a gold.
The keyboard goes all the way across the and it looks amazingly thin.
Did you get mashed on the keyboard?
Well,
at all?
That's the thing, yeah. Though. If they can, if they scavenge the Retina display and the USB-C port to the Air, then you might as well just collapse those two into one and not have a MacBook and a MacBook Air, but just have either
they look so
just
similar,
the Air
yeah.
or just
yeah.
the MacBook.
The only thing I could see is keeping the Air, especially like the 11 and the 13 inch. Keeping them lowering the price, because I've seen the MacBook Air 11 inch for like $800 or $700 on some places that not Apple, but that have discounted it further, and so that might be a way that they'd get people, you know, where they could compete on price
So the Air becomes like a low end ultra small line.
Yeah.
Oh wow! So shuffle it around again.
Sort of their kind of Chromebook thing, and then the MacBook becomes the one that you'd kind of expect to start at, and then if you want to get the Pro and get the big Retina display,
beefier. That makes a little bit of sense.
And all that.
But I remember there was a time when the MacBooks were pretty ugly. They were always the thicker plastic. You know, you could spot one in the wild very easily.
They were
and I
white,
felt like
or they were black.
They were white or black. I felt like they're always kind of compromising on, you know, the build quality of the chassis to get the price down. It's kind of what it felt like. It was a Mac, but it was definitely it felt like, you know, the old colored Macs, that in laptop version.
The Bondi Macs. Well, and the other thing, somebody was looking in OS X system image utility, which has the like there's a thing in the system image utility. It's got a panel that's supported computer models, and it says choose computer models that can start up with using this disk image, and one of the entries in it is 12 inch MacBook early 2016. Well, let's see there's the 12 inch MacBook from early 2015, and that's listed right above, so it does incline one to think that perhaps there's one to be announced soon. And there'll be more. We'll talk more about the stuff Apple announced. I put that under try, buy, or fry because I think that's where that discussion belongs.
All right, Pete, you're the boss. All right, well, we're going to take a short break here. Technology Bytes needs to go and reboot real quick.
Reboot! Every episode, we reboot several times.
All right, so anyway, this is Technology Bytes, and although I'm not legally required to say it, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm contractually bound to say I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm just Flicted.
I may or may not be Barrett.
And he's...
I don't know what to say.
Say, Groovehouse. We'll be back after this break.
Attention all KPFT members. Starting this month, everyone who donates to KPFT will get a KPFT foodie card. What's a foodie card? KPFT's charter restaurants will offer everyone carrying the KPFT foodie card discounts. The charter participants include Berry Hill in the Heights, The Burger Joint in Montrose, Ruggles Green, the East End Farmers Market, and more. Go to kpft.org for a full list of charter participants. donate to KPFT and eat out for less.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. And now we return to Technology Bites, most likely without a Barrett time.
Well, you might say that there is a Barrett time tonight.
Is there a Barrett time?
April Fools!
Barrett time! Barrett time!
We will get back on track. We're being audited this week, so I've
we're being audited, and they discovered we haven't done a Barrett failed. Time in a long time.
Oh no!
We're
going to
lose
compliance issue.
We're going to lose our charter.
Compliance. I'm going to come back with some action items.
You got to get with your people.
Some spreadsheets, and we'll remediate
this. See if you can generate some new synergy.
Ping me if you need help.
We need some Barings Oxley.
Barings
Sarbanes.
Oxley. Sarbanes-Oxley? Barrett's-Oxley?
Box.
Is Barrett time
Box Oxley. Compliant.
Is Barrett time coming back 9001 certified?
Let's hope.
Ooh, ISO 9003.
Why does the person who creates and makes it happen say, let's hope? We're hoping. You just need to get to work.
I'll make some time.
He's
I'll
going
make
for
time.
ISO 11000.
We need to set up a scrum.
Yeah, that's I had one of those today, too. I had a half-hour scrum, and they're only supposed to be 15 minutes, I thought, but somehow wildly out of control.
You're using a fragile process?
Yes. I'm going to use that Friday in the next scrum.
Way to think out of the box.
Oh, man. I worked on a project. I'm not going to say where because I don't want anybody who was involved with it to connect the dots, but it was supposed to be agile. That was the whole thing, was it was agile. And they were running it off of the biggest Microsoft project setup that I have ever seen, and it was far from agile. It was very, very waterfall. It was just see what it was is agile, where you take waterfall. So you go, okay, we got to have
like
these.
When you develop software,
need
is what
to get
he's
done.
Talking about. Yeah,
yeah. These 10 things need to get done. Well. Normally, we'd figure it'd take you about 3 weeks to do this part, for a developer to do this part. So we're going to do it agile, so you should be able to get it done in, what, like a week or two?
That's amazing how that works.
They have very short meetings where you're supposed to go through a certain amount of things very quickly. And the meetings usually, so it's called time box. So no matter what, it's this way it's supposed to run. No matter what happens, after 15 minutes or 20 minutes, you're usually supposed to break. Then there are also standing meetings to where no one's supposed to get super comfy. At some point, everyone in our meeting just said, we're just sitting down. Because this is, they gave up. I don't even know if we should call it Scrum anymore. But I'm not going to bring that up.
Yeah, really.
We give up.
You should call a rugby meeting instead.
Yeah, I think I'm going to just
put half the people on one
shorts.
Side of the room and half the people on the other.
That might be a way to argue settle some arguments. I think
because I mean that's what Scrum's from.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're like,
right.
No. This isn't what you think. This is really a Scrum. I brought in a football. We're gonna get chest. You know, chest is like shoulder to shoulder, and then we're gonna fight for the football.
It's some kind of millennial way of saying huddle, which huddle is just too base. Right, because football players huddle together, but Scrum is like an action huddle because they're actually in the circle going
all
the
butting
ball.
Heads.
Are we doing
pretty much
millennial methodology in our software development lifecycle? I didn't want that news.
The thing that Agile has reached the point where there's a lot of sort of pushback and anti-Agile people, but the thing I haven't seen is what's the new, what's supposed to be the thing that, oh, well, stop doing that, and now you've got to.
Backwards waterfall. That's my next major reverse one. Waterfall. Yeah, reverse waterfall. It's where you start with the software and
That's called evaporation.
Oh. It's different than vaporware, I'd like to point out, but not
maybe,
much.
But instead, maybe you should call it reverse cowboy, because at least people will be intrigued by it.
I don't know what that
Don't Google that, kids.
Yeah, don't look that up.
I'm feeling lucky.
Is that where the cow ropes you? No, I don't know.
Well, after the show.
No, that's okay. I'm getting the vibe. All right.
Yeah, okay. So, anyways.
To the cloud!
To the back alley.
Why don't we go with this?
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snark tank?
Okay, so yeah, I carried over some stuff. Well, it sort of merges with the iPhone or with the Apple announcement thing and the bite of the apple, but it is a real question of trying, buying, or frying and evaluating it. The big thing was the iPhone SE, and what that is a 4-inch iPhone, so it's like the size that you haven't seen since the old iPhone 5, except it has the iPhone 6S internals. So it's got the 12 megapixel camera, it's got the it's got big RAM. It does the it's got the better processor.
It dices. It slices.
Well, no, I mean it just has all the things that the other one before the smaller phones had, only had the 1 gig of RAM, and this has 2. And so on. So basically, it even supports Apple Pay. The whole thing is, if you want a smaller one, and I've been using an iPhone 6S Plus, which is the big, the kind of phablet phone, and I must say I did think about it. It's like, okay, well, would it be? Because it is a bit clunky.
And one
of the things that happens to me, the best description of the iPhone 6S Plus I read was somewhere in, I think it was, it might have been Wired, and said it was a dad phone because only guys of a certain age have pockets big enough to carry that phone around. Although I find mine falls out of, I wear cargo shorts usually when I'm just hanging around. And if you're in the car or whatever, it doesn't stay in your pocket like the old phones did.
You're using the wrong pocket.
Yeah, you need to use that cargo pocket.
You need to use
that
cargo pocket.
Time, man. Cargo shorts. Cargo pocket.
Yeah, no, I like to have it in the upper pocket.
That's not dad style.
He likes to have it in the space between the car seat and the door.
Or between the console, the center console and the
seat.
The
right
pocket.
Oh, you're in a right pocket carrier,
yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, I carry it in my right pocket.
That's where your keys go. You don't want it to get scraped by your keys.
My keys are on the left.
You're
my keys
weird.
Are on the other side, yes.
Where do you
see, I have the beard.
Are you left-handed?
I'm from the universe in Star Trek where all the evil people were.
All right, first of all, let's see.
From the original Star Trek.
Let's take a poll here. Where, Groovehouse?
Yep.
Which pocket do you carry your phone in?
Left.
Left. Okay, Flicked?
Left front.
Left front.
Left front.
Front right pocket, screen facing in.
Left front pocket,
right
screen
front
facing.
Pocket.
So that's like mine, which mine is right front pocket.
You and Barrett are freaks.
We're right-handers, so I reach for my phone with my right hand. How do you reach across your
I'm
body for the phone?
I guess.
Okay.
I'm not left-handed.
No, you're a freak then.
So you're
are you right-handed or left-handed?
Table
so my keys go
no,
in my right pocket.
My keys go in my right pocket, so I'm not going to put it in my pocket with my keys.
I switched key pockets. Key now goes in the left pocket.
Yeah, no, key doesn't go in the left pocket. Key goes in my pocket because you pull the key out.
My pocket knife goes in my left pocket.
Groovehouse, let's do another.
That's when I carry a knife.
All right, we're going to do a corollary now. So Groovehouse.
Wallet.
You carry your phone in your left front pocket.
Yep.
How many times has your phone fallen to the floor and smashed?
Zero.
Flicked? How many times have you dropped your phone?
Knock
I will
on
say
wood.
I dropped my phone one time. Barrett, how many times have you dropped your phone?
None directly from my pocket.
That's not the corollary we're making.
None of those. More times than I can count, Jay saw one of them several phones smash, but it was never pocket related. It was usually other stupidity.
When your brain is trying to think about when you have your phone in your hand, there's a part of your brain dedicated to thinking about where the phone's going to go back. when you put it away. And that
might
cause it to spontaneously jump out of your hand.
The majority of my phone mishaps have been, and this is like, if I was, and I mentally now statistically.
I like how you wag your phone when you tell the story.
I'll have it in my lap, and I'll get out of a car, and it'll, you know, shoot from my lap onto the cement down below. And that's
happened more
than
once. Had you had it in your left pocket?
Had I had it in any pocket.
I'm just saying, left pocket. All right. So,
right shark or left shark?
What about wallets?
Left butt.
Inside right. My boxers. So right I don't wear it on the outside. That could
you
be
said
stolen.
Right?
Right back pocket.
Right back.
Left back.
Whoa. Right back.
Right back.
Right back.
Right back. Right back.
Pete and I are, twinsies in every possible way so far.
Except for that I've never broken a phone.
And Groove and
I've
I
never broken one
I
of your
matched.
Phones.
So
you and I have that in common.
So you two matched on both. Groovehouse and I matched on both. So Jay's the one crossing over. He's like trans-technical.
Who is Lee, right-handed or left-handed?
Ooh.
Doesn't count if you're not
tiebreaker.
Here.
We need a tiebreaker.
No, you must be present to win.
You must
be
present
Lee,
to win.
Lee, the two Lees are twinsies, too.
Must be present.
I bet you guys match up.
That's possible.
So
we'll never know, though.
I guess so. Having used it, though, I when I think about how I use my phone, I must say I am almost semi-tempted by the small phone like that. Because I don't know, if the price is lower. It starts at about $400. I think they have two models with differing amounts of memory. There's a 16 gig and I'm trying to remember what the other one was.
See, look, I do like the price points on the new phone. Because that to me, I don't know if it's a mental price, but it's much more manageable than, when you get up into the brand. Because I prefer to buy a phone outright versus, lease the phone. So, $600 and $700 when you get into the high-end Android smartphones, and even, I guess, iPhones are that price, too. That's a little, that's a major
pluses.
Purchase. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's one of those where the small phone like that, going back to that where it doesn't take up so much space, and if you have it in a case or whatever, it fits in your pocket without being clunky, I can see a point to it and use it, to use it as a phone. The main point being to have it as a phone. I mean, I tried the 6S Plus just because, that it was the new thing.
Well,
I thought
you said,
see.
The first you said 6S Plus.
Yeah,
and I realized 6S Plus.
The plus, so I don't know. It's one of those. I think I will be interested to see how many people go with the SE, and because it's not before Apple when they offered something like this, they would give you it'd have too many
be compromised. Yeah,
where it'd just basically be an old an
but
iPhone.
But this
5
this has to be something. For them trying to get people who didn't want the large phones to spend money on an upgrade, right? Because there's probably a lot of people that had the 5S, and they're like, oh, those phones are too big. I don't want one of those. And they still haven't bought one. And so this taps into that market to get them to spend money to upgrade.
Well, and I think, and maybe it's Apple realizing that three screen sizes in phones pretty well covers everybody then. You're not leaving anybody out. There's not a point to going bigger than the size on the Plus.
What do they do with the what do they call that? The iPod, iTouch, Touch.
iPod Touch.
What
iPod
do they call
touch.
The iPod?
iPod Touch. That's it. So, what do they do with the sizes on it? Is it currently a 4-inch, or did they bump that when
I
they went to the 6 and 6 Plus?
Wow, as I go to their site, I'm not even seeing.
They don't even have
iPod
an iPod
listed.
Touch anymore.
I don't see it listed on here, and they changed it up where the. They don't have the Apple Store anymore. The site is all store and info. They used to have it where it was sort of separated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very good question. I haven't the iPod Touch. I think they updated it to be similar to the 5 or 5S. It's still around, but just not. It's got the A8 chip. And it looks pretty much
like a 5S.
I think so. That's what it looks like to me. Unless
I was just curious if they changed the size on it to the newer size, what they would do.
It's an 8 megapixel camera on the iPod Touch, and still looks like it looks kind of like the the iPhone 5.
So iPhones are still selling, though. That's not tapering off. I've seen bad reports on the iPads don't look.
Well,
like
I saw that
so well.
Apple had said that they'd warned it that they were selling because they were kind of reaching saturation, and so that iPhone sales were starting to slow down.
Oh, they are too.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
I think that's
part
of why they went to like the program where you can like do the like $10 a month where you're essentially sort of leasing
the
phone
yearly
and
upgrade,
keep trading up, so they can just keep cycling the phones through.
And that also makes sense with the price point, too, coming in with that lower price point to try and grab some of the lower end of the market or the people that, you know, would maybe be priced out of, you know, Apple kind of gear.
Yeah, I'm on the fence for my next phone. I don't have, you know, I've got the 6S Plus, he said distinctively for people listening. You know, I don't have to get a new phone because, you know, we're just coming up on the 7 this fall, but I have a downstream so that it's like if I upgrade my phone, then that upgrades.
It's a waterfall.
Basically, then people below me in the family can
reap the rewards.
Get to benefit from it. So I'm not doing it for me. I'm not buying the latest Apple technology for me. I'm really just finding a good way to upgrade for them. I do think one thing that I got a 16 gig last time when I got the 6S Plus. And I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to get the one with more.
The one with more.
64
more
gig
and more.
28 gig.
Now it's 20% more
and
more.
And keep it longer, you know, where it has more capacity, because it's just I have been bumping up against the limits of it.
What is yours?
Pictures. A 16 gig.
So
16?
There's no manage it. They're not expandable, correct?
16?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the base one.
That's insane.
Does that give you about 2 megs left over for apps, or how much?
No, well, I went through and pared down. I mean, I just have what I use on there. It's got the music that I use, and it...
I feel like I've made a mistake. I've got the Samsung now that this is now also obsolete, the Galaxy 6 Edge, S6 Edge Plus, and it does not have, nothing expandable in it. So I'm used to having like a micro SD slot where I can throw in 64, you know, gigs or 128 gigs. And with this, I actually got to a point where I took enough pictures and video while traveling that I bricked the phone. You know, there was no more room.
Wow.
And of course, I was not in a position where I wanted to go upload, you know, 32 gigs over international data plan to the cloud room. So it's, you know, it's kind of stuck for a little bit.
Ouch.
So never again. I like the fact I like removable media. I think that's a. Which,
although that doesn't, that's a fairly.
That's, I know that's
need as far as.
Is it though? Is that?
I don't
it
think
falling out of favor.
It shouldn't be. You
I
should
think
have
power
the option.
Users
or you just buy local data card sim and put it in.
Yeah, yeah. But still, I still like the idea of, you know, being able to, you know, have data on a phone and then very quickly, if you just want to just take that data out and swap it with something else.
But so I just seriously wonder though what size I, you know, probably this the SE is designed to be the cheap phone.
What are the SE memory options?
16 and 64 gig.
Huh.
And so I think the deal, because it goes back to it allows the cellular people to you do the old subsidized phone thing, you know, where they take $200 off for a 2-year contract and you get the phone for $200 or $100 or whatever.
And then they make $300 or $400 off of it.
And they make their money off of the higher rates they charge you for the minutes. But I don't know. It's one of those where it's not a slam dunk that I would get the plus sized phone next time. I kind of think I must say I'm sort of leaning towards not doing that. Not because it's been a failure, but it just doesn't. I haven't seen that it's been
that much of a benefit.
Useful. Yeah.
It's a pretty big phone.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to pick up an iPhone 5 just to hold it again. I was like, "Oh, this fits in my hand."
Yeah, single hand operation.
Yeah, I got the iPhone 6 Plus because I thought, well, this is going to be like a tablet replacement for me, and it kind of is, but I kind of don't use it for that. I mean. So I think, you know, having the regular iPhone again might be the way to go. But I certainly have liked the. I got the 128 gigs, so I've got the storage.
See, I've got the 6, and it took me a little while to get used to it, but it doesn't feel too big, even when I first got it. But it felt bigger. But now when I've like gone back to like the 5 and the 4S, the 5S, like they feel kind of small.
Yeah, that would be that. I guess that would be the interesting thing after doing the Plus would be to go and handle one of these SE ones in person, because is it going to feel like you're using like a microscopic phone? Well, it's in my hand somewhere.
With my little baby
there is a
phone.
New Zealander movie coming out, or it's already out. I think they should put those out in tandem.
That one, I think the New Zealander movie went over like snakes on a plane, which is
did
lots
that
of internet buzz,
die?
And then.
Oh, see, I wasn't even aware it hit.
It came and went.
Well, it was completely dwarfed by them releasing all the episodes of season 2 of Mr. Robot.
What? I missed that, too? All right, touche on the exploding plants in the front yard. I will never meddle in your affairs again.
So I guess the other one, that they announced, the other big product, I mean... We're not gonna try by or fry watch bands on Technology Bites. I just don't see, unless it does something really amazing. A watch band
is a watch band. Is a watch band.
You have to have a watch first.
Whatever phone doesn't do anything.
Next on try by or fry belts.
Belts and suspenders. Do you have to choose? No.
No, you don't.
Can't run two antivirus programs on a Windows computer, but you can wear belts and suspenders.
It's called redundancy. I think it's important.
The other big device that they offered is the new iPad Pro, which is a 9.7-inch iPad Pro. You know, there was the big 12-inch iPad Pro, and now they have a smaller one. It's essentially got the same kind of guts as the 12.7-inch, except the 9.7-inch iPad Pro only has 2 gigs of RAM as opposed to the 4 gigs of the big iPad Pro. The other thing that it does that normal iPads don't do is you can use the pencil and the smart keyboard thing that they came up with for the iPad Pro that don't work with the... I guess iPad Airs are the current things. So, I don't know. I've used the giant iPad Pro, and that one I can see using the bigger screen. It wasn't heavy like I thought it would be. I was setting it up. I was configuring it for a client, and the nice part is he was on vacation, and so I brought it home to configure it, and I had it for a whole weekend where I could kind of test drive it and all that, and I thought it would be just too heavy and big, you know, so sitting on the couch and reading or whatever would be, you know, where it would get too heavy, like old iPads, regular iPads used to do that, and I was real surprised because it wasn't. The screen was beautiful, and they didn't have any of they didn't use the big, you know, the accessories, so that one didn't have that to test. So I don't know if the main thing may be the smaller one having a lower price might get more people into the iPad Pro. But I do, apparently some of my clients, report that they're using the iPad Pro almost as like a laptop substitute, that they're using it to take their notes and to have their information with them in a way that they used to take their laptop to do. So, you know, I guess it, like, I don't know if I did the iPad Pro have, I think they had the one with the LTE data, because that would be pretty lethal. And that's one of those things that I'm still baffled why Apple hasn't put an LTE modem inside the MacBook or the MacBook Pro or those, because it seems to me that could be highly valuable. That would make them very useful in being more portable and, you know, where you could pop out the SIM and switch for foreign or switch providers. But they haven't done that, so... Anyway, so that's those Apple things. This one, you probably want to find out more info, and we'll probably talk about it more after their event. On March 31st, Tesla is going to unveil the Model 3, which for those of you at home who don't know what the Model 3 is, that's the Tesla that normal human beings can potentially afford and use. That's the one that'll be under $40,000, and with the like $7,500 government credit, it'll be under $30,000.
So, are these going to be back ordered from now until the Model 4?
yeah, you got to wonder. you got to wonder. I'm guessing they don't. Well, they won't have insane mode. They'll have more like
family mode,
vaguely unreasonable mode,
soccer game, dad grocery store, late dad joke mode,
soccer
late
mode,
for dinner, soccer mom mode. But yeah, it's supposed to retail for about $35,000 and be able to drive 200 miles on a single charge.
That could be a game changer. I think that price point, and then enough to get around the neighborhood, you know, for a couple days.
I wonder. Yeah, well, because a lot of there are electric cars that have been out that, for instance, for the Houston market, you could have a problem and you wouldn't have left town, because that's one of those that you can do in a place like Houston, where 200 miles, if it's that, that should cover you for any day. The thing I haven't seen that I wonder, presumably it'll have the same charging port as the, where you can use the free Tesla charging stations that are on the interstate. Because if they did, see, with the 200-mile range and all that, then that would mean I could get one and drive here and charge up at Sealy where they've got the charge station, and then be able to charge up and get home at the end of the night.
So March 31st is when pre-orders or reservations for the Model 3 open up, it looks like.
They're going to open the reservations, and they're going to basically unveil it and show it with all the details. There's also the possibility that some of Tesla's other vehicles that are in development, there is a mysterious Model Y. There's the Model X is their SUV.
That's the SUV, yeah.
And then there's a Model Y. And Tesla Motor fans have been waiting with bated breath to hear more. Maybe Musk is also going to reveal that why his wife divorced him, because she's basically – that came out this week. That's sort of neither here nor there. But there's been speculation about the Model Y. Nothing's been formally confirmed by the company. In fact, Musk quickly deleted the tweet mentioning the new vehicle, though not before his followers were able to snap a screenshot. It sounds like the Model Y may be a crossover based on the Model 3. So the Model X is the Model S, and the Model Y may be the Model 3.
I do like the gullwing doors on the Model X.
Yeah, well, and the price range would be a lot closer to if the Model Y is based on the Model 3, then of course the price would be closer to one that normal humans could afford. So that's coming up, and so we'll watch it. And I have posted the links to all the articles, so you can get the link to watch the live stream, because apparently there were 650 invitations and none of us got ours. So you're going to have to watch the live stream if you want to see it. Then the last few things on to check out. This one is tiny. We'll go back to the tiny thing like the phone. The Cube Mobile Projector I found at Uncrate. It fits in a pocket. It's 2 inches on a side, and it projects a 50-lumen WVGA image at sizes up to 120 inches. And Barrett would like that it has micro SD on it. It has MHL, which I don't know what that is, and HDMI inputs. I know what that is. It has a built-in speaker. And for this little mobile projector you can carry around, it has an LED bulb that lasts for over 20,000 hours and includes its own tripod. And all this stuff, though, weighs under a third of a pound.
Wow.
So it's kind of that's one I would like to try it, because that would just be – that's like small enough to have around with you and then do the mobile projection thing without having to – you could just do that against a wall or your – although I hate this whole whatever VGA stuff, I don't remember anymore. I used to know like what that meant by pixel size. Now it's like HD, 4K, and then bleh, whatever other size. That means when they say something that's not HD, that means it's less than the 1080p, than 1920 by 1080. So I don't know what size WVGA is, and I'm too lazy to Google it. But it seems like this would be fun to have in your pocket. It's not crazy expensive, and it's not super cheap. It's around $300, so that's not terrible. And for a projector that you can, it seems to me that's sort of comparable specs to one that's a lot larger and heavier that would be harder to carry around and wouldn't give you much more in the way of specs.
Yeah, it looks like you can, you may have mentioned this when I was actually reading the description of it, but you can stream straight from your phone too. So, you know, within, you know,
nice.
Mobile phone in your right pocket, cube in your left pocket, maybe a little bit chunky. But yeah, you're a walking movie theater at that point.
Unless you're carrying your keys in your right pocket, and then you're...
No, if only there was something you could hop on to get two people from point A to point B while carrying a phone and a cube projector.
Oh, you mean like the Ruckus bike? Not to be confused with the Ruckus...
the Honda Ruckus, yeah.
Honda. This one, when I saw it, it was sort of interesting. I couldn't decide if I liked it or not. If you look at a picture, it looks like a very abstract bike, almost like if a kid drew a bike with fairly small wheels. The thing that's interesting about it is it's electric, and it has a, they call it a lounge seat. And what that means is that instead of having a sort of single-person space on it, it's, I don't know, it looks like it's about 18 inches long, the seat.
It's geared for riding two up. It's kind of being put out there as, you know, you can ride by yourself or with a pillion. With that electric assist motor, it makes it a lot easier because I wouldn't want to pedal for two people.
It has an adjustable bottom bracket so that you can have different size riders. Front and rear racks, it doesn't show that in the picture, but it has cargo space for you and your passenger. The way it looks to me is like you can basically order a lot of stuff. They start with a basic thing and you can order different configurations.
They actually call it the Ruckus?
Yeah, they do, which is odd. It's like a cycle company. I want to say, like, is it West Coast? What's the name of the cycle company? Doesn't really matter, I suppose, but it's like a West Coast kind of cycle bicycle company making this, it seems like. But the design elements, like the bare tube frame, a lot of things, it shares a lot of design elements with the Honda Ruckus, which is
like
kind of odd. And then also, for those not in the know, the Honda Ruckus is a very kind of, there's a mod community behind
there's
it.
There's a big community of, aftermarket
parts. Rip it down, and put all kinds of stuff on it, make it light up, change the color, stretch it out.
Well, and it's the little, it's a little, the, like 25cc
it's
motor.
It's a
50, 49cc.
Oh, 49.
Yeah,
oh, it's
49. 50.
It's okay. It's just under the legal limit where you don't have to have a license to do it.
So
but people
like
are taking these and dropping them 150s.
Basically, it's the old the Honda Passport scooters, the ones that you see everywhere.
Except with a Ducati tube frame.
yeah.
Well, and the motor is like offset down by the rear wheel and low, so the center of gravity is lower. It's probably really stable to ride, too, the Honda one. This one looks, it's got an interesting kind of bare bones look to it with the electric thing to give you a little help. That's kind of that the usefulness is good.
It is not sitting on bicycle tires.
$1,000, so it's not, you know, it's not going to be like you're choosing between this and a Schwinn if you're going to do it. But it is a way you could go under the scooter thing or the Ruckus. The Honda one is more like a couple grand, I think.
Yeah, I would think so. Probably twice to two and a half times as much as.
But
this.
It looks like an old. It looks like old mini bikes, except where there's motor was. There's just a giant hole and some pedals. and it has disc brakes. That was kind of they did it pretty. It is like if you turned an old, except not crazy heavy. Turned an old off road type bike into a street bike.
Yeah, it's got 3-inch tires on there, so that's thick enough to get through some gravel or some sand or whatever.
And with the electric assist, you could still pedal and get somewhere without.
That's interesting. I'm a big fan of the electric assist stuff as I'm getting older in age, but would still like to get on bicycles. So I think that's pretty cool. And I've always dreamed of pedaling uphill very easily, and that's. It seems like this is kind of a thing. I know that there are a lot of some of the motorcycle manufacturers are coming out with electric assist bikes now, so it's. I think they're going to kind of meet in the middle. I know KTM has some stuff that's coming out
as
soon.
Batteries get better. I'm wondering now as I look at it, I wonder where they hide the battery on this, or is it?
It's got to be under the seat. That's the only place I see space for it.
Or is it in this like?
They've got a lot of tube space.
But so there's that one. I kind of wish they had a picture of it with somebody on it, because it's got a bit of that abstract art look to it, and so you wonder, would it be like...
It may be like the really large really guy pedaling a clown bicycle, we're not entirely sure.
Or the, like, overweight twins on the mini bikes thing, like at the Shriners in the little cars thing. And then the last thing, this one, Sean Parker, the Napster guy, just loves to go from industry to industry torquing people off badly. Some people support this and some people really hate it. There's a new thing called Screening Room, built by Napster co-founder and former Facebook president Sean Parker. It's reportedly a set-top box and a service that aims to bring new movies into your house the same day they hit theaters. The box is rumored to cost $150, and the movie themselves would be $50, with 20 of that 50 going to the theaters, partially to cover the two real-world tickets that come with each one, with each movie. I guess so you could see it at home and then see it in the theater? I don't know.
Oh, you get tickets in theater when you do it?
That's what it says.
I hadn't heard that.
It says the box is rumored to cost $150, and the movies themselves would be $50, with $20 going to the theaters, partially to cover the two real-world tickets that come with each one.
Wow. I don't know what they mean.
It's still in the early stages, but it already has the backing of guys like Steven Spielberg, J.J. Abrams, Peter Jackson, Martin Scorsese, and Ron Howard. What do those jerk-offs know about film? Just kidding. I know that's kind of about the best panoply of directors we've got around.
Didn't we? I thought we talked about this on the show maybe a few weeks ago. Maybe just in passing.
Maybe in passing.
Yeah, but I don't think it was fleshed out this fully.
It has
the
interest of studios like Universal, Fox, and Sony, so it's also likely going to happen, and soon. So
I think it will improve the quality of all the cam rips on the internet once this rolls out to homes.
The toughest thing to me is, right now, for me to go to a theater, it takes a really seriously good movie, and so then they have to find that first movie that people are willing to spend to watch one movie. To watch your first movie is $200, $150 for the box and $50 for the movie. So you got to wonder, is that gonna, you know?
I can see people that, you know, have sunk a lot of money into a home theater setup, you know, to where money's not that big of a deal, you know, and maybe also or people
it'd be
with
nice
even with families.
If there's not a, frankly, if there's not an Alamo Draft House near you, I could see where this could have some.
You know, a family of five to the movies, you know, I'm sure that's going to come in, you know, over that price point of, you know, the movie rental or however you want to call it. I guess it's a rental still considered, huh?
Yeah,
is there a name
see, I
for
wonder,
it?
Do you just see it once or do
I
they...
I think the way that I read it when they were kicking this idea around a month or two ago was that when you purchase it, you have, like, it starts ticking. So you might have, like, 24 hours. Yeah, because Flick had mentioned DivX. I remember this now.
Oh,
so
okay.
They start ticking. Now, I don't know if you can, like, rewind and go back and do other stuff or if you can rewatch as many times as you want to within that 24 hours. Uh-huh. But it sounds like they were still kind of, you know, kicking around how to lock that down.
I've heard somebody else has announced Screening Roomster, where you can share these movies over the internet. It would just be the height of irony for Sean Parker to get burned by somebody who comes up with an easy way to share his product on the... and one that I thought I had put the link in, and maybe somebody showed up and I got distracted. Oh, no, I just didn't open it. The final one, so talking about movies, Batman versus Superman is apparently coming. And we're not going to go into spoilers or any of that, but the thing that I saw on Metafilter, the headline was, "There's a lot to be worried about." And just the headlines, so they don't really contain spoilers unless they may spoil the reviews that you see. But just a quick rundown of some of the headlines. A comics geek's verdict on Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Why would they even be fighting?
Batman v. Superman review. This movie is a crime against comic book fans. That's Vox. Batman v. Superman asks some provocative questions but forgets to answer them. That's Vanity Fair. Batman v. Superman. Dawn of Justice is an unpleasant endurance test. It's just some of it. You have to savor when the critics really go into savage something.
So is this a courtroom drama or not? I'm very confused.
Batman v. Superman. Dawn of Justice is as inelegant as its title.
Okay, so yeah, it's courtroom justice. Drama.
Batman v Superman will make you hate Batman, Superman, and the Justice League.
It's kind of a GQ. It's kind of a comic book retelling of Kramer versus Kramer.
Wonder Woman can't save dull Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. That's comic book resources.
Oh, I like the next one.
And then Yawn of Justice.
Wow.
Ben Affleck got the cool car, but Wonder Woman steals the show. That's from the rap. The overstuffed Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice builds a world, but is it one we want? So
you're saying the reviews are mixed?
Yeah, apparent by the headlines, I guess.
The reviews are shaken, not stirred.
It sounds like Ben Affleck is pretty decent in it, and it does sound like a lot of people mentioned Wonder Woman positively.
Wasn't he Daredevil?
Who?
Ben Affleck.
Oh, he was. Yeah, in the old the one with him and Jennifer Garner was.
Yeah,
Elektra.
As Elektra. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Now I think the Daredevil TV show on Netflix is successfully erased.
It's
Ben Affleck.
Daredevil. It's really good compared to that movie.
So I would guess, based on reading the headlines of the critics, that Fry might be the term that, or might be what would happen to the Batman v Superman. I don't know. I it seems to me like it's kind of like watching the good guys fight each other doesn't seem like a...
That's what I want to know. Why are they fighting?
Although, what, the next Captain America is what? The good guys fighting each other. It's Iron Man versus Captain America.
I don't remember
Wars
the
thing where they all take sides and fight each other.
Is this Batman versus Superman? Is it related to the Frank Miller graphic novel?
I think it's based on a comic.
Because there was, I remember reading one a long time ago that was where Batman and Superman fought each other pretty much to the death.
And it was you arguing with a friend about Batman. Or
no, this was, I want to say it was Frank Miller.
Because doesn't it sound like close to that? Where who'd win in a fight if Batman and Superman fought?
Flicked, right, yeah. It's borrowed straight from Frank Miller's, what is that, 1986 is
Dark,
when it
Dark
came
Knight.
Out. Yes.
Return, so Fall of the Dark Knight.
I'm getting ads popping up all over the place.
Dark,
woo! Batman, The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
The Dark Batman.
Yeah. That was kind of like the first graphic novel that that shook the industry, the comic book industry at the time, like kind of lulled it out of a sleep into a new awakening for about 5 to 10 years until Marvel, and specifically Marvel, DC also, to some degree, but especially Marvel, started to realize that they had a captive audience that were collector mentality, and so they would make... When it really got out of control, I think there was an X-Men where they made like 10 variant covers, 5 regular ones and 5 foil ones, silver foil.
So people would be buying
10 copies of the same. But they did it with Batman too, because I remember the first issue of, I forgot which Batman series it was a new Batman series, and they did the comic book and then they did like dust cover on the comics, like on a paper comic. They did paper, thicker paper covers with 4 colors. So it was the same comic book, 4 different colors. So, you know, it's like everybody's like, oh, I've got to have all of them. And, you know, I don't know which one's going to be the one that there's fewer of, so it'll be the one that's the most collectible, so I have to buy all of them. And at some point, after Marvel and DC kept doing that to people, they got fed up and people stopped buying them, and then there was a crash in the comic book, and it's never recovered from that, pretty much.
Ooh, so greed from the comic book industry kind of pushed that whole.
But if you picked the right cover after the crash, those are worth a fortune. No, I'm kidding. To reinflate the bubble. Because that's what it takes, is a screw-up or a crash, and then there's the one that nobody bought that suddenly
or
is
misprint.
The one that everybody wants.
Misprint.
Like, I've got to actually have a misprint. Version of one of the Sandman novels by Neil Gaiman, I have the complete series, but one of them I have was like, because I got it like when it came out, and they had flipped 2 pages in it, so it actually made it really confusing when you read it, because suddenly things didn't make sense.
And no longer meant when you read it.
No. No. I tended, every once in a while I would do something where I would... But usually I didn't buy stuff that was pre-bagged, right? The only way you could keep anything mint is if it's sealed.
Right.
Once it's, if you buy it not sealed, if it's been sitting on the shelf, it's not mint.
No, my good friend Jim deals in Silver Age comics, and he sends them off to be graded, and they get graded
and they get sealed
up in the hard plastic with the grade on it and all that. And there's actually a company that will... they'll do non-destructive corrections on comic books. Like if you have a crease in it, they have a way of taking the crease out that, and they could take a comic that's worth $1,000 and make it worth $8,000 by bringing it up just a notch or two.
How much do they charge?
donate $7,000.
Apparently, they're very reasonable. It can be expensive if you don't do it to like low dollar items, but if you've got something that goes from like an 8.5 to an 8.7 or a 9 or whatever the grading thing is, it can really change the value. And once it's graded and sealed,
Spider-Man.
So he's bought. People are buying graded comics, and they'll look at it inside there, and they'll say, "I bet you I could get a little bit more." And they'll send it to have it. They'll break it out, and they'll clean up their thing, and they'll have to send it back to get regraded. It'll get regraded higher.
So how to make money?
How
in
to
the
make
comic
money in the comic books?
Like everything.
So are we out of the try, buy, or fry yet?
Pretty much.
I wanted to. But while we got a little bit of time left, bring some attention to this thing I just spotted. Microsoft has released an artificial intelligence chatbot. And I was alerted to it because security Taylor Swift mentioned it because it's called Tay. It's Microsoft's Tay. It's an AI chatbot with zero chill. And you can chat it. You can text it or message it or send tweets to it.
At TANU. I believe.
Huh?
No, I believe, isn't it? That's where you send it to? It's at Tay and you.
Tay and you, yeah. And right now the alt-right and Trumpalos are trying to teach it to be a Nazi. So it's very difficult to follow, but it's apparently a learning AI, and it will make edits to photos and doing some other stuff, sending back on Twitter.
So it's a part of the like let me Photoshop that for you group.
Maybe it's remnant. I mean, of course, it reminds me of what was the one Alyssa or what was the old
Eliza?
Eliza, yeah. That you type into and
how are you
why
feeling?
Do you type that.
It's on a, and it was an AI contained on a 5.25 floppy disk. But anyway, it's kind of exploding today right now, but it's kind of weird to watch because it's already a verified Twitter account, and it's people have got it to say some pretty hateful stuff.
Gizmodo,
leave Tay alone.
The opening sentence in their article is a new artificial intelligence chatbot by the name of Tay is here, and wow, I wish it weren't. The bot is the brainchild of Microsoft's technology and research and Bing teams, which created it in order to, quote, experiment with and conduct research on conversational understanding. As Microsoft Power User points out, Tay was recently released into the wilds of the internet, where it has been interacting with users in a manner best described as, quote, mid-40s male attempting to sound like a 16-year-old girl.
It's going to be, did any of the rest of y'all watch Chappie?
I watched Chappie.
Yeah, I saw it.
It's
going to
be kind of like that when Chappie gets in the hands of Yolandi and Ninja.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like they're teaching it how to be thug life.
Tay is currently hanging out on Twitter, Kick, and GroupMe. On Twitter, Tay is verified and lists its location as the internets. While the official bio describes it as the official account of Tay, Microsoft's AI fan... AI fam from the internet that's got zero chill. The more you talk, the smarter Tay gets. Wow. It already talks like a troll.
Well, it's good. You know, I'm just waiting for someone to not know it's an AI. There have been a few bots like that loose on Twitter that will auto-reply different things to people, and they won't realize that they're having an argument with a bot.
There were some decent ones... on IRC back in the day. Like, I remember having a conversation with what I eventually figured out was a bot, but I also tended to like try to be absurd, and it was trying to out absurd me, but it was because it was a bot and it didn't know what it was doing. So we kind of had a face off of who could be the most absurd, and eventually I was like, this thing isn't even really a real person, and it wasn't. I'm sure some grad students. Thesis got a bump in its research from me for that.
Well, this is very 1980s. What?
Oh, nothing. So Tay actually dropped a word that Yolandi or Ninja may actually use in same spelling and everything else. Zeph? Halfway down, just very recently.
Interwebs?
On the, no.
Zeph?
Well, that we'll show after. It's not a word you should say on air.
Oh, is it South African?
Yeah, it's South African kind of pronunciation or something. But it's like that. But yeah, that's weird. So that, either they're tricking Tay into doing that, or something's gone wrong. Maybe Tay is going to become Chappy here in a few.
Awesome.
So now we're going to go quiet while we read this. Who is it that Chappy emulated? What was the name?
Yolandi Visser and Ninja. They're from Diantvoord, which is South African for the answer. We really can't play much of their stuff on the air, because I would lose all of the dump stuff pretty quickly.
What are you looking?
They're letting Tay tweet out obscenities
and white nationalist stuff too. Yeah. It's weird because, like I said, the alt-right is going after it and getting it to say stuff or reply back. So it's making some really blanket weird statements.
So has Tay said yet that the Celtic cross icon it uses is for family heritage? And the 88 in its username has nothing to do with anything else.
Oh.
Yeah, this is interesting. And then there's something going on with circling. Is Tay circling photos? What's going on with this? There's something
where people are sending a photo and it's identifying the face in the photo, circling it, and sending it back.
Hey, Tay Zonde has a Twitter account.
Yeah. He steps away from the Twitter account to breathe, though.
Oh man. So yeah, well, so well.
Just
Google
interesting.
Plays,
it's just
Google
getting underway.
Google beats a Go Master, and Microsoft blows up the internets with their artificial intelligence.
Well, anything that Microsoft might have resembling intelligence would have to be artificial. Barrett is. What's the matter?
Oh, there's. I'm very.
He's sharing non-radio friendly stuff.
Yeah.
No, they've got a Donald.
Well, you know,
Trump thing
on Twitter,
where they
you can
too.
Look
weird.
At. You can click on the actual tweet and see the conversation.
See what started.
So somebody sent that AI that photo above, and that's what it did to it, sending it back. So it's right now. It's just the artificial intelligence, quote unquote.
Guessing,
identifying the face, adding something onto the image,
tweeting
it back.
This account's going to end up actually being like subservient chicken?
Yes.
Or this is the AI that eventually causes Skynet, and then it's all downhill from here.
It's going to get elected president.
Well, the author of this Gizmodo article that I was reading some excerpts from said has her chat with Tay, and it was, well, because Tay asked if they wanted to go to DM, slide into DMs.
Yeah, it's been sliding a lot of people to the, I guess it's open to DM. I guess you could DM it and keep your conversations private. It doesn't have
but
to
I think
be
you can
on
only
Twitter.
Do that if you're following each other, right?
No, and Twitter made a change really recently where you can make yourself
DMable
without following someone.
So the person messaged Tay, what are your thoughts on Microsoft? And Tay's answer was, what are your thoughts on ShopRite? And so the author wrote back, I got mugged in ShopRite once, just to try and, I guess, throw it. And she said, what does it do? Tay said, well, someone told me they had a knife and then stole my wallet. Tell me then. She says, note, I didn't actually get mugged in ShopRite, but wondered whether Tay would care if I did. Answer, no. But when reached by phone, a Microsoft spokeswoman confirmed the company is indeed behind the project. Beware of interacting with Tay, however, because the about page notes that Tay might use the data you provide to, quote, search on your behalf,
wow,
and, quote, create a simple profile to personalize
and
your
buy
experience.
Things as you on Amazon.
Tay is going to talk to your Alexa.
Tay's going to start doxing orders. Everybody.
So there's that AI that we're all supposed to be afraid of, right?
Wow.
But
I'm not afraid of it yet. It's still very 13-year-old girl.
AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it starts. That's how it sucks you in. And then suddenly you find that it's publishing your text, your chat that you had
it
with a...
won't open the pod bay doors.
with the equivalent of a 13-year-old girl, so it's like To Catch a Predator, too. Artificial Intelligence Edition.
Well, I just tweeted at it. I said, a moose once bit my sister, so we'll see. Somebody needs to teach it something good.
It may start sounding back like a 40-year-old man not trying to sound like a 16-year-old girl and know the Monty Python references.
Go away or I'll tweet you a second time.
We've fired the entire title staff and replaced them with
the last Twitter. Line. The last AI has been sacked. All right. Well, anyway, that was my contribution to the last part of the show. I'm fascinated by AI. I mean, I'm afraid of it actually ever happening. But when I see this come out from Microsoft, I'm less afraid.
The Taybot is dropping double lols. So, yeah, there's absolutely nothing to fear here.
The blue tweet of death you'll get from
AI. Unless it is. So, Barrett time. Before we head out, going to bring up one more time, the Geek Gathering is a week from Friday on April Fool's Day. So we have that to look
forward. So be sure and show up.
I pity the fool.
Somebody
will be there. Are you going to be there this time, Barrett?
Yeah, I believe so.
You've gone out of the country twice in rapid succession. Are you going to do that again?
Not for the first. I'll be out of town possibly the week after. I'm not going to miss the show, though.
When are you going to... what's your home address and when will you be out of the country?
I will be leaving my front door unlocked when I leave the country this... Yes, now. I'm staying home.
You're not going?
I'm joking with the burglars. No, I'm staying. I'm not leaving the country. I'm going to come out to the Geek Gathering.
You're not at home now.
I'm leaving my killbots fully armed
during the Geek Gathering,
yeah.
So you can note that one down.
Well, people probably know that I'm not home right now. So, I mean, I think
Wednesday. Yeah,
I'm homeless.
No.
Just right now. I'm without my home currently. Not in general.
Next topic. Not globally. Yeah, well, and I'll try and make it. It's just been phenomenally amazing the lengths that circumstances will go to make sure that I can't make it to a Geek Gathering. I'll say that.
My home has been wired up recently, so I've got all my lights are voice controlled, all the music's voice controlled. Everything, for the most part, is running through a couple of Alexas, and then I've also got it plugged into IFFT, if this, then that.
IFTTT.
IFTTT. And a couple, and then also Arduino, because all that stuff is running over, more or less it's just Bluetooth with serial messaging with JSON. So you can actually configure all your lights with just a JSON, block of JSON data.
Wow.
So it's pretty easy. It's like all this web stuff. You can throw it home automation and you're good to go.
It makes me imagine they crack open the window with a crowbar and the two thug type guys come in and the one says to the other, Where do you think all the money is? And Alexa says, the money is... and lights the way, turns on all the lights. Oh, the safe combination
Follow
is...
me to the rivals.
Would you like me to order you a beverage?
No, we need to change that. I know it's illegal to, arm your home too, but there needs to be something like some alarms.
Traps.
And I've got an actual alarm too, but it would be kind of cool to have that wired or not wired into, something that's addressable from outside. Well, that's also dangerous too. You start opening up home security systems and you make that addressable, then other people can get in. So it's slippery.
And you put that back door in it so that you can get in, and then that's the door that the thieves use to get to you.
But it is getting fun. I mean, you can pretty much have a smart home now for not very much without even realizing that you've got a smart home.
And having to do a bunch of wiring
kind of snuck
or any
in.
Of that.
Yeah, all
I've
Wi-Fi,
looked at that kind
Bluetooth.
Of stuff, and they hadn't really gotten there, but it sounds like you're getting close. So you've got that swing. You need to write up about your swinging geek bachelor pad. And,
we might bring some lights out or do something. Yeah, we might actually bring out.
The
we'll
Alexa
see.
Too.
Yeah, everything and just kind of have it all controlled. We shall see. We're awesome. Out of time for now, though.
Yes, we are out of time. So, you have been listening to Technology Bites with a little silliness at the beginning. I'm hoping Flick will carry us out with some more. I think he might have wore himself out with all that frivolity. But anyway.
He spoke more words.
he spoke more words.
This episode than usual.
All right. So, anyway, thanks for tuning in. We will be back next week and happy to be here. Hopefully full strength this coming time. Anyway, I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Rufus.
Yeah.
Is KPFT great? Absolutely. Is it as good as it can be? That's what the KPFT Anti-Racism and Diversity Committee wants to hear and see. And that committee wants you. On Saturday, March 12th, starting at noon, the Anti-Racism and Diversity Committee will meet at the Montrose Library. The focus of this meeting is planning a conference titled KPFT, The Past, Present, and Future of Diversity. This conference has been endorsed by the KPFT Local Station Board. It will take place on Saturday, June 4th at the CWA Union Hall downtown.
The goal is to hear from at least 200 listeners who want to express their views on the full range of minority programming at KPFT. What is the station doing right, wrong, and how can we do it better? It starts with planning. If you support KPFT, we want you.
Join us Saturday, March 12th at noon at the Montrose Library. We don't want to do this without you. This is KPFT Houston.
You can help KPFT by donating your unwanted vehicle. When you make a donation, your vehicle is resold at an auto auction and the proceeds help to support KPFT. KPFT accepts cars, trucks, motorcycles, and recreational vehicles. Your donation qualifies as a charitable deduction on your federal income tax return because KPFT is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Just call 855-KPFT-CAR to make your donation. Please be ready to share the title, location, and general condition of your car. This information assists the tow company in scheduling appropriate towing arrangements. Again, the number is 855-KPFT-CAR to make your donation. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.